How'd you like to win $1,000? We're going to give you a chance in a little over 10 minutes from now because the National Signing Bonus is back. I have the code word right in front of me. And in 10, 12 minutes from now, I'm going to give you the code word. So just stand by for that, and you'll be able to text that code word in. And if you're selected in this hour, you're going to win $1,000. It's going to make you, because the National Signing Bonus is back as of right now on this hour of this show today. Welcome back to the Morning Show with John and Hugh. As you drive into work today, do drive safe. I know roads still slick out there, and we have had so much rain. Did I see right that we set an all-time record last year for the most rain in Atlanta? Was that what it was? Was it second? Is that what you're saying, Arthur? Second all-time? Whatever. It's been a lot. Was it the drought just a few years ago? Remember the drought? Oh, yeah, that drought. The drought here, Hugh, 6-7 years ago, one day I'm running outside during a rainstorm in July with buckets trying to catch rainwater because because we couldn't water our lawn. We weren't allowed to. They wouldn't let us. You could only water your lawn. It was like Tuesday and Saturday at 10 a.m. in the morning or something.
So you mean to tell me you're sitting out there catching raindrops with buckets?
Buckets.
That's pitiful, John. And I guess this is the history section of the show. we have this history lesson. But that's pathetic, though. That's kind of pathetic. A little bit pathetic.
You know, you just try to do whatever you can.
Damn you that grass.
Don't worry, man. That grass dies. It gets expensive.
Man, listen, that grass will be dead and stay dead on my front lawn. It'll come back. Jesus will fix it. Fix it, Jesus.
Will the Falcons come back? Well, that'll be interesting to find out. Today, the 10 a.m. news conference with Thomas Dimitroff, the general manager, head coach Dan Quinn in Flowery Branch. The media will be there. And here there are going to be so many questions. You know, I think first question it'll be interesting, the first question out of the box after they get done with
what you doing? What you going to do?
You know, you guys feel like you're on the hot seat.
That's a good question. I would say, one, what is your plan for Vic Beasley? That's a valid question. I think that you have to, going into this press conference, John, I think number one, you have to ask questions that you're probably going to get an answer to. I mean, I know every reporter tries to go in there, but I think realistically get an answer to. As far as what are you going to do, as far as coaches is concerned, I don't think he's going to tell you that. That's going to play close to the vest. I think a question that he will answer, what is going to be your defensive philosophy moving forward? And what was so different about the coaches that you had, and what are you going to do now differently than what the coaches did? Something like that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's actually a really good question.
I mean, that's something that when you have to answer that. You can't just sit up there and say, well, you know, or I would even go so far as to say, what was it that, you know, you appointed Marquand Manuel, Coach Manuel, to be your defensive coordinator. What was he not doing in your defense that caused you to fire him?
I mean, because he was running your defense.
Yeah,
after
he was
all.
Running like he was you handpicked him. So what was he not doing? I mean, that's fair. I think another one would be, you know, Sark was another guy that you fired. Two seasons in, what the offense? I don't know what the numbers were the year with his first year. But the second year, you're the top 10 offense, total offense. So what went into your decision to fire him?
Mm-hmm.
Things of that nature. I mean, what, you know, because when you look at it, like I said, you can spin that any way you want to. Top 10 offense. Granted, had trouble running the ball, was like 20 something in running the ball. But still, when you talk about offenses and you look at the offenses that are elite, I mean, you were right there. You were better than some of the offenses that are in the playoffs. So. Why did you fire him?
Keith Armstrong, who is for those of you who don't know who Keith is, he was a special teams coordinator and a very kind of, how do you describe Keith? Very upgoing, upbeat, bubbly personality. I mean, really kind of a vibrant guy. You know, guy you'd like to be around. I mean, very magnetic guy. Would you say, Hugh?
Yeah, great coach. Right, yeah. I would say, but obviously Coach Quinn felt like something was lacking. That's another good question. Why did you fire Coach Armstrong?
Because, you know, some fans would say, you know, hey, look, we haven't had a return guy, you know, who's, you know, been able to get, you know, we went through the Eric Weems. We've tried, you know, so many different things here in terms of return guys. We can't get a return game going, which, by the way, happens to be true. But special teams isn't just about return game. If you look at the kicking game, one of the things that's been true is the Falcons' kicking game has been best right there at the top of the NFL with Matt Bosher and with Matt Bryant. And then when Bryant went down, Keith Armstrong had a say, right? Gino Tavecchio, did that work out as a fail-safe? I mean, so it is an interesting question here. Yeah, to why all three here? Let's go back to the defensive coordinator issue with Dan Quinn and what that means, Hugh. I think if we jump forward here, let's say, and I'm just going to play this out. I don't want this to happen. Obviously, I'm a Dan Quinn fan. I'm certainly friendly with Coach, and I still believe that he's a very good coach. But if he were to lose his job with the Atlanta Falcons at some point, I think that you would see numerous NFL teams immediately offer him the chance to be a defensive coordinator in this league again because he's that highly regarded as a defensive coordinator. When the Falcons hired him, he was regarded as maybe the best defensive coordinator in the NFL.
I would agree with that. I think the NFL is like anything else. As far as you're asking me, would he get another job somewhere else? I think he would get a consideration. I definitely do. I think he definitely would get a consideration to go somewhere else.
You know, so now that he's the defensive coordinator, I think it's a fair question to ask. We know that you did this, for half the season in the Super Bowl year. How much of a distraction is it to you as a head coach to be, so repped in having to call the defenses? And because as a defensive coordinator, you would think that you would have to meet with your defense at times during the game, which takes you away from whatever's going on the field on the offense.
John, I think the thing that we're forgetting here, he's been on the field, and he's probably been instrumental in what defense is calling right now. I think the biggest thing that's going to change, John, is he's going to actually be calling the defensive plays. Whoever the offensive coordinator is, he's going to be the guy that's going to run the offense. Coach Quinn will probably peek his head in a little bit to see what's going on, but that's going to be whomever that guy is. If it's Dirk Cotter, that's going to be his job. Mm-hmm. And Coach Quinn probably is not going to be running around in the offensive room, trying to look over his shoulder. I'm thinking that whoever he hires, it's going to be somebody who he has full faith in that they can get the job done.
To the question about the offensive coordinators, I'd probably say, Coach, we understand that Mike Mularkey, former Falcons offensive coordinator, that you've already interviewed him. We're hearing that you will, and if you can't confirm that you will, be interviewing former Falcons offensive coordinator, former Tampa head coach Dirk Cutter on Saturday. Just confirm that. And do you have plans to interview Gary Kubiak or Daryl Bevel or anybody else for the job? And give us kind of an idea. But I think there's a follow-up as to whether or not, kind of trying to probe a little bit to find out if this is Dirk Cutter's job to turn down.
Or just ask John, how important is it to you to get somebody in here that is somewhat familiar to what you're running, or is this going to be an offensive coordinator that's going to run a completely different offense? I think that kind of answers your question because you're talking about, we've all assumed that with Dirk Cotter, it's going to be just the terminology familiar, getting re-familiar with the re-familiar with the terminology.
Yeah, because a number of Falcons played under Dirk Cutter's offense before he went to Tampa. And so there will be, Julio Jones and Matt Ryan, most notably Jake Matthews, that can lead kind of the other players along. It's not such a big transition because they'll know the moment that Cutter's hired, Matt Ryan can start talking to him about this is what Dirk likes to do.
Or you could ask, how important is it for you to whomever the offensive coordinator is to keep it as simple as possible? With it being Matt's, seventh offensive coordinator in his career? Something crazy like that?
Mm-hmm.
So how important is it to be simple? Because it's safe to say, John, you don't have the luxury of having a mulligan. I don't see Arthur Blank, Mr. Blank, being cool with mulligan years. Hey, you know what? This is first year. This is so-and-so's first year. Insert offensive coordinator's name here. This is first year. Everybody had to get that terminology down. Player. Not this year. You can't have that. You can't have another year where we're sitting here trying to figure out what we can and cannot say in this offense and trying to figure out why it's not working. No, it got to work. Whomever you hire, it has to work out the gate. And if that means dumbing it down and adding stuff as the season goes, then dang it. That's what you do. You better get six plays in there that you run to effectiveness. If that's what you're going to run, it better be six money plays. That's it.
One of the other questions I would have this morning, we're talking about the News conference today at 10 a.m. at Flowery Branch. End of the season news conference with General Manager Thomas Dimitroff and Head Coach Dan Quinn will be about players especially to Thomas Dimitroff here. A free agency begins March 13th. The draft comes up, of course, in April, and the Falcons are in need of help along both lines, and will they seek to go into free agency to get an offensive lineman? Will they seek to go into free agency, Hugh, to get a defensive lineman? Now that they've dropped a 14th in the draft, you know, if those defensive linemen that they covet, Thomas, if those defensive linemen that you covet at the top of the draft are gone, do you think that there's a chance that you would go into free agency to seek help to bolster your offensive or especially your defensive line? And when we talk about free agency and the defensive line, there are some quality guys that could be had this year, Hugh. Tampa's floating Gerald McCoy. You have Sheldon Richardson out of Minnesota, Kyle Love out of Carolina. I mean, there are defensive tackles, veterans, good defensive tackles. The idea of Gerald McCoy in Atlanta alongside Grady Jarrett, boy, that solves a lot of problems immediately.
Yeah, but you kind of went that route before. You went that route with Don Terry Poe a little bit. I think that with this draft, John, that there is a defensive lineman that is going to be there for you. I think I kind of have to explain the way that you go into this draft. Okay, when the Falcons figure out where they're picking at, they are operating from their realistic expectations of who potentially could be there when they draft pick. So when you say stuff like the guy that they covet, they're going to covet guys that they know that they're going to be there with the draft pick that they have, unless something happens. Say somebody that they really, really like, but they know he's not going to be there, falls in their lap. Now, that's something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start getting ready for the draft, John, if you're not the first or the second or even the third pick, then you're pulling from a small pool or a smaller pool of guys that you could potentially get. So it's not like, say, if I'm going into the draft, if I'm Coach Quinn, I'm not thinking I'm going to get Nick Bosa. That's not my thought process. I might covet Nick Bosa, but I know realistically that Nick Bosa is not going to be there when I'm picking. He's not. So I don't even look at Nick Bosa. I'm not looking at Nick Bosa. That's not like he probably is graded high on my list. And if he falls in my lap, then yes. But I'm not even looking at Nick Bosa unless I'm thinking of moving up to get him. That's the only way that I can do that. If I feel that he's the guy that's going to change my fortunes, then yes, I'm going to move up. I'm going to do what I got to do to move up in the draft to get him. But no, I'm operating from a realistic pool of guys that are going to potentially be there when I'm picking. So then that's when I start to figure out who I'm going to get, who could potentially be there. This is not like I go into the draft and say, oh, I want this guy. You got to be realistic of where you're going to get your picks from or what pool you're picking from.
Right, and at number 14, there should be one of the star defensive tackles should be there, given the fact that there are teams ahead of them that are going to be drafting, for example, quarterbacks. Like, you may see Dwayne Haskins rated as the 25th best player in the draft, but if a team needs a quarterback, they may move up, and Dwayne Haskins may go in the top five just because he happens to be a quarterback. It is time now for you to win $1,000 in the National Signing Bonus.
Now it's time to reveal our National Signing Bonus code word. The code word is
paradise. Paradise. No, we're not talking about craps and to die. We're talking about, wherever you consider paradise to be. Right now, today, paradise is $1,000 in your pocket. That would be paradise. Paradise to 72881. That is the code word for this hour. P-A-R-A-D-I-S-E. Okay? Paradise. Like in two tickets to paradise. No, we're not going to sing Eddie Money. But there is Eddie Money to be had. $1,000. All right? Code word for this hour, paradise. Message data rates may apply. Do not text and drive. Complete rules at 929thegame.com/rules. And as we mentioned, the National Signing Bonus now back officially. And the word to start us off is paradise. So hopefully you win $1,000. If you do, let us know. And congratulations to you by texting paradise to 72881. All right, we're talking about the Falcons and the news conference today and some of the questions that we have. Another one of those issues, Hugh, is, of course, who are you going to re-sign off your team? And like Matt Schaub has said, he wants to be back. Last season, I believe Matt Schaub made $4 million. If they want Matt Schaub back again this year, and Matt Schaub's come out publicly and said he wants to be back, I don't have a problem with it, but it's going to have to be at far less than $4 million.
You don't go backwards, John. That ain't how it worked. Not normally. I mean, to be in a backup role, I mean, I don't see – I mean, maybe if he's looking at potentially not having another job in the NFL, but I would think that his services would be needed somewhere else. He might not start, but I think he would be a nice serviceable backup. $4 million for a good backup, that's kind of cheap.
Because the only two guys I see getting paid in terms of a raise are Grady Jarrett and Julio Jones. Those are the two guys I see getting a raise.
Listen, I'm not a capologist, and I'm not a person that works with the money in the NFL. But $5 million for a reliable backup, that to me is cheap. I mean, it is. Somebody come in and run your offense, and potentially put him in there for a couple games, don't miss a beat. That ain't cheap. I mean, that's cheap to me. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Boy, so many decisions.
And he used to be a starter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think I'd keep him.
So many decisions on so many players. You know, we expect, you know, when's Grady Jarrett and Julio Jones going to get their new deals? Because those are the two that are probably going to get big deals. You know, you're probably reworking a number of contracts. You're letting some players go. Some players you're not going to have any say over, like Tevin Coleman, who's probably going to be gone. I mean, what was it? The number, was it 4 years and $30 million?
Something like that. That's what his starting point is going to be, John. He's probably going to get more than that.
Yeah, and you can't. That's just not going to happen. I just don't see that happening. And then, you know, all these guys that you have to kind of rework. And now some of the guys you want to keep. I mean, you have to make decisions on, and the list is rather long, you know, in terms of, you know, free agents that you control. But there's still free agents. Brian Poole, Jordan Richards, Kamal Ishmael, Bruce Irvin, Terrell McClain, Justin Hardy, Marvin Hall. I mean, there's a lot of guys you have to make decisions on as to whether or not they're going to be part of this team next year. And then what are you going to do in free agency? But the first thing you have to do is decide which players are going to be back with you next year. And that's why I think getting an offensive coordinator is going to be so important, because once you get the offensive coordinator done, Hugh, then you're going to know what kind of offense that you want to run around. Is it going to change, for example?
John, it can't. Honestly, I don't think it can change too much. Not if you don't want to deal with growing pains. Now, I'm not saying that these guys are not that bright, but you're talking about trying to get 11 dudes to be on the same page almost immediately. We've all sat here and said that this is a season, this is a make or break season. This is almost a Super Bowl or bust season, I mean, coming up. So how comfortable are you really with having wholesale change on your offensive side of the ball?
Well, I'm not really comfortable, but I am more, I guess, let me put it to you this way. Let's say that you just fired your tight ends coach, right? Do you want to go to more tight ends? Do you want to get another tight end like Hooper who can be a downfield threat, or do you want to go get big blocking tight ends? You know, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's changed, but you're still talking about terminology, and now you're still talking about changing offense, because now you're going to have an offense that has more of tight end sets and more tight end sets that you use, two tight end sets.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a different offense. That's, in essence, a different offense, a different blocking scheme. Now who are you taking off the field? Because, you know, you're talking about if you're used to running 3 and 4 wide receiver sets, and if you put another tight end out there, you're taking somebody off the field. So who are you taking off the field? Are you going to run a 2-back set still, or are you going to run a 1-back set?
Right.
Are you going to – so now if you're going to run a 1-back set, then there's no need for a fullback.
Right.
So then what are you going to do, Ricky? Like, it's so many different things you can do. So, you know, that's a decision they're going to have to make. And that, in essence, changes the offense.
It is
Thursday.
Hope you win that Eddie money, that $1,000. I saw him on a commercial the other day. Man, no offense, Eddie did not look good. It was like, ooh, oh, man. All right, Eddie, you haven't aged well. No offense. The Pittsburgh Steelers. Antonio Brown might have been the Masked Singer, but man of mercy, he is the marked man at the moment. What the heck is going on with this team? And we get ready for Wild Card Weekend. It's all next.
NFL or Super Bowl 53 coverage like us, because we're your home for the NFL in Atlanta. Super Bowl 53 plays here. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It is Wild Card Weekend in the National Football League. And we have a number of the games covered for you. Matter of fact, all four are going to be on our stations here, including the two on Saturday, back-to-back, Colts and Texans and Seahawks-Cowboys. Sunday, we'll have the Chargers and Ravens, and then the Eagles and Bears will be on our sister station, 1380 WAOK. So here we go, and we'll get into the games in just a moment. But there is news that is percolating around the NFL. I have been talking about this Masked Singer thing last night with Antonio Brown. Welcome back to the Morning Show with John and Hugh. But this is set against what's going on, the drama. The Pittsburgh Steelers, oh, my God, to be a fan of this team. Kenedra Batiste is. I should ask her. Man, Hugh, this is nonstop. You're getting ghosted by everybody. Every star is just not showing up for work. You know, it's just, I don't know what's going on with Mike Tomlin. There's a thing going on here with Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger are like buddy-buddy and tied at the hip, right? And everybody
That's what
else,
it seems like.
Yeah, and everybody else seems to be set against them. I mean, for whatever reasons, in the case of Le'Veon Bell, of course, it's a never-ending contract situation. In the case of Antonio Brown, I don't know, is it a respect thing? I mean, there's a lot of divisiveness in this locker room.
It's funny. When we start talking about this, it became one of those things where you look at it and you're like, you ask yourself, what's going on? I think Ryan Clark, he added a little light to the situation when he talked about it earlier in the week. He was talking about how a couple times the Steelers went out of their way to accommodate Antonio Brown with, you know, giving him contracts and things of that nature. And I think part of this, John, is the divadom that comes with being a receiver. And I know that we've been spoiled down here in Atlanta because that's not Julio Jones's character. But when you look at the history of most receivers, this kind of falls into lockstep with that. And as far as what's going on in the divisiveness in the locker room, yeah, I think it was Jesse James, the tight end, said they feel like the Kardashians. It feels like a soap opera there. So, yeah, it's a little bit of that. Everybody wants to get their shine. And the bottom line is this, man. I have never been on a team ever where you might have some teams where the wide receiver might be the better player, but the quarterback always going to get the nod. Always. I mean, that's just how it's designed. We've heard teams – perfect example. Remember there was some rumblings out of Seattle between Richard Sherman and Russell Wilson? Guess who's not in Seattle anymore? I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, I'm not saying it's right, but the quarterback always he's going to get the most love because he's the one that directly affects the outcome of the game. Like, if the quarterback ain't on, you ain't getting the ball. And we've seen that. And Antonio Brown has been frustrated about that. We see it with DeSean Jackson down there in Tampa and his frustration. So it's, man, listen. It is what it is as far as the quarterback's position is concerned.
Well, Antonio Brown doesn't show up for practice multiple times. He's in and out. He's late. NFL's wondering if they faked an injury report on Antonio Brown. He's out there chirping. He's got teammates going on, you know, radio stations calling him out. He's calling his teammates like Ryan Clark names back, you know, and so it's an unsightly situation again, and Mike Tomlin looks like once more he's kind of lost. He kind of lost the locker room in the whole Le'Veon Bell thing when you had guys calling out Le'Veon Bell for not showing up. Well, here we go again, and this is what Mike Tomlin had to say about this latest roundup in Pittsburgh.
When we're talking about our darkest hour, okay, we're talking about playing to win a game and needing other dominoes to fall for us to be in the tournament and a guy not communicating, that is a real element of discussion, certainly.
Did he quit on this team?
You know, you can describe it in whatever ways you want to describe it, but there was a lack of communication there that can lead to thoughts and things of that nature that can go in many directions. The bottom line is that we were playing a significant game, and he didn't do a good enough job of communicating or being available in the hours leading up to that performance. Obviously, we take his lack of communication, his lack of presence, particularly on Saturday prior to the game, to be something that's very significant and will be handled appropriately so. I'm not going to speculate on trades and things of that nature. We haven't formally received a request in that regard.
I'll kind of condense Mike Tomlin's answer to, did he quit on the team? Mike Tomlin's answer was, yes.
He didn't say that, John. I think that this is one of, and I understand what he did do to your point is he left it open to interpretation. But you have to understand that in this situation, he had to be very, very careful in the way that he worded everything that he said.
I understand that. But when you don't get an absolute, no, he didn't quit on the team. He just, you know, I think
yeah,
the,
that's
the
why
only
he left
other option.
He left it because think about it like this. You're trying to navigate a relationship that you know is potentially over, but you're not going to be the one that blows the bridge up. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You definitely, it's easy to say that. And anybody outside, the way that was worded, you could take it and say, yes, he quit on the team. No question about that. But you have to understand, as a head coach in the NFL, he's a hell of a player. And you're trying to do everything that you possibly can to repair that relationship as much as you possibly can and make sure that it can smooth it over. That might not be the case, but at the same time, you got to try. You have to try.
Well, here's the biggest problem with Antonio Brown and what's going on with the Steelers, and we'll kind of leave it here. You know, spend the whole show on it, but they can't really trade him. They can't cut him. His cap hit is just insane. It's $21 million over 2 years. That's his cap hit in dead money. That is a crippling hit. It's a crippling. And who could take on the contract of Antonio Brown? And who wants to take on Antonio Brown as a person coming into your locker room right now? He's a great player. But, man, this situation is ugly in Pittsburgh. It's going to be, like we said, an interesting offseason. You have 8 openings for head coaches in the NFL. And one of the openings, there's a rumor this morning floating around from apparently a research firm has suggested, and this is a report from Reuters is reporting this, that a research firm for Tampa has suggested that the Bucs have a strong conversation about their opening with a particular coach. And that particular coach is Brian Kelly, the head coach at Notre Dame. Now, Brian Kelly's 57 years old. If Brian Kelly wants to go to the NFL, now would be the time because the NFL's been a young man's game. So if Tampa wants to go that route and you're Brian Kelly and you want to go to the NFL, I'm thinking at 57, Hugh, this is about his only chance.
We've already seen this story. I've already seen this play out. This is the same thing as that other Kelly that came into the NFL, that Chip Kelly dude. I'm not a big fan of coaches that coach with his style trying to coach in the NFL. I just don't think it flies. You know, he's done a great job, Brian Kelly, that is, of masking the fact that he's a little bit of a Richard when it comes to treating his players the way that he treats them. Like he is. He like snatching kids up in their collar. And it was another incident that he had at Notre Dame that I'm a little vaguely familiar with, but he's had a few incidents with players and you know, putting hands on players. No, I don't think that'll fly. I'm not a fan, as you could probably tell by my tone. I'm not a fan of his coaching style.
No, I'm not either. And if I'm Tampa, there's no way I hire him, but because I just wouldn't want him. But let's say that we're not Tampa. Maybe, you know, maybe let's say the Glazers down there decide that they want to hire Brian Kelly. I just go along with me for a second. That creates an opening at Notre Dame. You know the people lining up for that job? Man, one of them has to be, because I'm just telling you, if Notre Dame suddenly comes open, Urban Meyer's head is going to feel a lot better real quick. I'm just telling you, it is. Because you can talk about Ohio State, but Urban Meyer's made it pretty clear. His dream job of dream jobs of dream jobs is Notre Dame.
See, that's why I don't know. I mean, he's made it clear that he's probably not going to coach again, and he also made it clear that I hear you. I hear you. That Notre Dame job with all the money and the perks that come along with that would be something that you definitely could not turn around. Turn down. Hey. And if you could turn that program around, that would be pretty cool. That would be pretty cool.
As a general rule, would you say Notre Dame is a better job than Tampa?
I would probably say. You're talking about
just if you compare
job security,
the two.
Yeah, I would probably say yeah. Only one they ran up out of town was what, Charlie Weiss? He's the only coach that got really ran out of town.
Mower.
Yeah, see, I remember Mower. That one. Okay, yeah. Well, there you go.
Jerry Faust, too. I mean, Jerry Faust, that's who I was thinking about. Yeah, George O'Leary. But, you know, that was a different situation, okay? Boy, George could coach. I like George. George was a good dude. This whole thing about his resume was just stupid. That was just the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. But, no, Jerry Faust. But the Jerry Faust thing was a joke. You should never have hired a high school coach. You hire a high school coach to be the Notre Dame head coach? Come on. Stop with that. Who had that idea? That's why I got Mulder, because he was the head coach at Cincinnati Mulder. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. It's kind of an interesting little side story here. We get ready for the game. Certainly we'll be breaking the games down tomorrow. There is a couple of quick bits of news here. Nick Foles for the Eagles now saying he is drastically,
drastic,
yeah, words are hard, drastically improving every day. So good news for Philadelphia is he gets ready to take on the Bears. You know, he's not he doesn't have anything broken in there, so apparently
he's banged up a little bit.
That's good news. And then Melvin Gordon is back in practice for the Chargers. Because remember, he got injured in the fourth quarter of a meaningless game, and everybody went,
everybody's looking at Coach like he was crazy. I know we're probably going to get into it, but I like the Chargers' chances in Baltimore. I like the Chargers' chances in Baltimore.
And that, you know, Lamar Jackson thing that they've got going, the good thing. Yeah, we'll get into that tomorrow. We'll start breaking down the wild card games over the weekend. Certainly, we'll pick the games tomorrow. But some interesting games. It's going to be an interesting postseason here. Who will the four bye teams have to face in the next round, and what kind of matchups are we going to get? Who's the team? Because of these eight teams, one of these eight teams is likely making a conference championship game coming out of this, coming out of Saturday and Sunday. That the top four seeds, one of them will lose, at least. So who's going to be the hot team coming out of here?
I hate this song. You hear it everywhere now. I don't hate it. I just hear it a whole lot.
A lot of college football coming up, including Eli Gold in the next hour at 8:40. We'll talk with him. College football rapid fire around the corner. So going to be a big hour of college football ahead. Update you on the Hawks and where they stand after last night's loss. And next up, we're going to talk about Mean Gene. Tony Schiavone is going to join us. And we'll talk about Mean Gene Okerlund and his impact, because it's been such an outpouring of support after he passed last night. That's next on The Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 90 Time The Game.